At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime.
Happy New Year! Oh, was I supposed to say that with you?
I don't know.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
Wow.
2024.
Yeah, do you remember like in the 90s and we thought 2024 or, you know, oh.
Yeah, we thought like.
Yeah, the 2020s.
2000s. Yeah, like 2020.
That's it sounds so futuristic.
It does. It does. And when I think of like the girls being in a graduating class that's like 2040 something, you know, I'm just like, is that even real?
I know.
That's not real, is it? Mm-mm. Yeah. We lived through Y2K.
We did.
And it was like, we thought we were going to wake up to mass chaos.
Disaster. Yeah.
And nothing happened. Not a thing.
I was
the computers were like, yeah, I can compute this. I'm fine.
Yeah. So, I was just talking to my grandmother the other day about it. Like Y2K, everybody thought, you know, Jesus was coming. And yeah, anyway.
That's funny.
The computers aren't going to know how to roll over to 2000.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then we didn't do a very good job of inventing the computers, I guess.
And now we have AI.
Now look at us. Oh my gosh.
Listening to us.
I know. Now I can order groceries on my phone, get them delivered. What a time to be alive. I have to tell you.
Yeah.
I struggle sometimes with things like that. You know, I told you last time I don't like going to the grocery store.
Right.
I don't want to go out of my house. I don't want to shop when I need to do that stuff. And everything's online. I can do all of that from the comfort of my rear end on the couch or laying in bed at night, you know.
Yeah, not and having to take three kids to the store. Well, yeah, we've
right.
already,
we know.
We've had that conversation. I know y'all don't want to hear it again, but it's.
But you need to hear it again.
You need to.
It's just a great time to be alive. I know there's a lot of crap in this world and, you know, we talk about terrible things every week. Mm-hmm. But those are the positives about life. I just think that's one of the beautiful things about life. I would have much preferred to live back in the 50s, probably.
Yeah.
Simpler times. But mm-hmm. Hey, here we are.
Yeah.
And I'm taking advantage of modern day.
Yeah. I was just listening to a sermon earlier today, actually, about, you know, we always talk about back when times were good. But really, there were people in those times thinking that times were bad.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, it's just a cycle.
We're always looking to the past, I guess, to simplify.
Right.
I think.
Times that we knew. And
exactly. Because we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Exactly.
So we do like consistency. We like to know stuff.
Yeah.
As humans, we're always seeking answers and. Speaking of the future,
mm-hmm.
Do you have any, this is so cliche, do you have any New Year's resolutions?
I don't. I think I told y'all last year that I don't really do resolutions. Yeah. I just kind of go with the flow. So, I don't know. A quote that I've been saying the last few days is new year, new choices. You know, if we just take 1% of every day and just make a good decision, like really think about what you're choosing, then mm-hmm. I think that'll make for a better life.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah. New year, new choices. New year, new you.
Yeah.
New choices, new you. That's cool. I don't make resolutions either. I think I'm going to stick with and hone in and double down on my boundaries.
Okay.
And like preserving my energy.
Okay.
So.
As you should.
Yeah. When I spend my energy on things that do not matter, it takes away the battery life mm-hmm. that I need to give to my kids and that I need to give to our podcast and that I need to give to mm-hmm. things that matter. Like my small business that I've been neglecting because wow. So it's just, I think I want to focus more on that this year. And so, yeah, just, not getting bent out of shape about stuff that doesn't matter.
Yeah. Ooh, that's good. Yeah.
You know, Kourtney Kardashian, she gets a lot of flack. Okay. And rightfully so. I get it. She's probably my favorite Kardashian just because she's like, I will not work. Mm-hmm. I don't want to. The end. And okay. It drives everybody nuts because they're like, you think you're so much better than everybody. But she's like, no, I just want to spend time with my family. Like, I don't need to work.
Right.
I'm a millionaire. I'm cool. I don't need to work.
Yeah.
She doesn't care about, she's like, I don't care about being famous. I'm already famous. Like, I'm already rich. What do I need to do?
Just let me have my family.
Yeah. She's like, and I think she's kooky in a lot of other ways, but I love that about her, like that quality that she's just like so unapologetically has her walls all set up, you know?
Gotcha.
Anyway, I like that.
You do you, boo.
Okay. I'm gonna do me, boo.
Yeah.
Okay, boo. Guys, I gotta just tell you what this setup is right now. Lena and I are on the couch in blankets.
Cozy.
The fireplace is on. We have glasses of wine.
Mm-hmm.
We just really need a bearskin rug about now.
Yeah.
It's very romantic. Yeah. So
Candace knows how to set the mood. Set the
mood. I should be telling too bad I don't have a ghost story prepared because this is such ghost story ambiance.
Okay. Well, let's get into it.
Yeah. They're like, stop talking. Okay, well, you know, this story just sucks. Mm. It just does.
As they all do.
As they all do. This one is just so, they all are, senseless, mm-hmm. ridiculous. Like, it's just going to make you mad. So just be forewarned about that. The date was July 9th, 2001, in Cresco, Iowa, a Midwest rural farm town. It was, my notes say it was a town.
I'm sure it was.
No, the sentence makes sense, but my comma like threw me off. Okay. It was a town, as they say, where people don't lock their doors.
Okay.
Okay. And crime just was not very common.
We've heard this before.
We hear this all the time mm-hmm. about small towns, especially murder. It was just not a thing. In fact, there hadn't been a murder in Cresco for 40 years.
Ooh.
40.
That's a good run.
I mean, that's a long time for not even one murder.
Right.
So that just kind of goes to show you. So when Officer Kimberly Orth responded to a well check to the home of Angela Hike, she was not really too concerned at first because like why would she be scared, you know?
Yeah, they're just gonna go check on her, everything will be fine.
Yeah. Angela's friend Lisa had called the police because Angela, who went by Angie, didn't show up to work at the grocery store where she was a clerk. So Officer Orth actually knew Angie. She's like, I'll go. It was a small town,
everybody
knows everybody. Mm-hmm. She approached the door and knocked. No answer. So she cupped her hands and kind of pressed her face up against the glass. And through the living room window, she could see that there were candles burning in the home, like in the living room.
Okay, yeah.
This raised a red flag because when she got there, she noticed that Angie's car was gone.
Oh.
So now she's like, there's a candle burning. Did she leave and forget the candle or something isn't right? So Officer Orth contacted Angie's dad and said, have you seen Angie? He's like, no. But she filled him in on the situation and he headed over. You see, he had a key.
Oh, okay.
Like a lot of daddies do.
Mm-hmm.
He had a key to her house. So when he got there, he let the police in. By this time, other officers had arrived for backup. Now, police slowly entered Angie's house, basically treating it like they were clearing the home. So they had their weapons drawn. They wanted to make sure there was nobody in the house that shouldn't be there. And they were looking for Angie, of course.
Okay.
And I'm sure one of the first things they did was blow out those candles. Lord knows how long they'd been burning in there by themselves. But they're looking around the living room. Then they look in the kitchen and that's when they found Angie's purse.
Oh.
That never makes anybody feel good.
No.
You know? What woman do you know that leaves the house without their purse? Upon further inspection of other areas of the house, they noticed her personal effects. Her other personal effects were present. Makeup, deodorant, toothbrush, hair dryer, you know, things that you would take with you if you were planning to be gone.
Right.
They started to get the feeling that they were possibly standing in a crime scene.
Oh.
It was just eerie and it didn't feel right. I think investigators just get that feeling.
Yeah, they just know.
And I'm sure it's hard when you're standing in someone's home. And this may not have been true for Officer Orth because she may have been in the home before. But other people that, you know, other officers that have just come into the home, they don't really know what they're looking for. They don't really know where you leave your keys or if it's weird that you're, I don't know. Her one of the police officers remarked that her sink had dishes. It was filled with dishes. So it looked like she hadn't been there.
Oh,
I hope they don't come into my house because they'd be like, how long has she been gone? But they just know. You get a feeling. Mm-hmm. You get like hairs on the back of your neck stand up. And right about now, you might be thinking, well, maybe she took her car somewhere and
who knows? Just was running real quick down the street. She's coming
like
back.
Maybe she went somewhere. Like, she's an adult. She can do that. And that's what most police officers say. Well, Angie had an 8-year-old daughter.
Oh?
Named Ashley. And she was also missing.
Oh, no.
All her stuff was at the home as well. So, you know, the urgency was heightened. So they began a more thorough search of the home. In Angie's room, Officer Orth found a journal / diary of sorts. It was like a, you know, like a date book that has a big thick note section or like notebook. Yeah. So it was kind of like a planner, kind of like a date book, but it had just notes written inside, like plans and whatever. Mm-hmm. So that seemed really important. So she collected it as evidence. And there were a couple other things that were collected. But there wasn't much out of place or anything that really looked like it could be quote unquote evidence. All they really knew is they had to find Angie and Ashley. Now, Angie was described by her friends and family as very loving, very happy. Just, she was mature for her age, which is how she ended up with a man named Bert Lucas. Right out of high school. He was actually 18 years older than her.
Oh, yeah. Holy moly.
But he remarked that she just carried herself really, you know, well. Mature. And he didn't even see her as some young thing, you know. Oh. She was very mature for her age. They dated for a while, but they never married. Their union, however, did result in a child, Ashley. Mm-hmm. Shortly after they had her, they split up. Just wasn't working out.
No.
Bert and Angie's split was amicable, and they remained cordial. Ashley was described to be just like her mama, vivacious, energetic, sweet, a little cheeky, like most little girls. Her dad, Bert, said that she'd sneak up on you and just giggle, like try to scare you.
Oh.
But before she could scare you, she would like crack and giggle.
Get too excited.
Yeah. She seemed like so much fun. So they ended up putting out a bolo for Ashley and Angie. For Angie and Ashley, and they began canvassing the neighborhood. When asked if they'd seen anything unusual, a neighbor told police, yeah, actually, he saw Angie that morning around 6 a.m., and he said, I think it was Angie. Yeah, he said he noticed because she backed her car into her driveway all the way to the garage. And he said that was just like not her typical behavior. So when he saw someone backing in, he thought, oh, all right. Yeah. You know, like he just took note of it because it was out of the normal. But he didn't see her leave or get out or anything. He just noticed it and went inside. That was really the only person that noticed anything different that day or that morning. But what about Ashley's dad, Bert Lucas? So they wanted to talk to him, of course. He's right. Angie's ex. You always want to talk to the ex, especially when there's a child involved and there could be custody. You know, they don't know. But when they went to speak with him, he was completely a mess.
Oh, no.
Just so upset. He was so concerned about their whereabouts. He did not, like, he was like, Angie would not just take Ashley. It wasn't like that.
Right.
She wouldn't take her. She wasn't vindictive. There's no reason to do that. They had a great custody arrangement, and he just really wanted to know where they were and if they were safe.
Mm-hmm.
He said he last spoke to Angie that Sunday, the day before their disappearances, and her and Ashley were planning to go tubing at the river with Angie's best friend, Lisa. He said, even though, you know, we weren't together, but Angie wouldn't just go off and not tell me. Like, she was very respectful. And as I said before, they didn't have a nasty, complicated relationship. Bert actually said they got along a lot better after they broke up.
Oh.
Like, their relationship kind of grew into really good friends.
Time apart.
Yeah. So he would have Ashley on the weekends and everything was fine. Everybody was very content with their arrangement. Bert was asked, okay, well, where were you last night? He said that the night before he went out with some friends to a bar for some drinks and he didn't stay out too late. He said, I had to get up early the next morning for work and so I headed home early. He said he went to work the next morning as per usual, etc. Pretty easily verifiable. So they visited the bar and spoke with his friends who said that he did leave around 10 p.m., which was pretty early. I mean, none of them were leaving that early. His superiors at work confirmed that he showed up at work on time the next morning. So his alibi checked out with all of that. And with that, they basically ruled him out. There was one more thing they needed to follow up on, though, with Bert's story, because he mentioned that Angie was supposed to spend time with Lisa.
Okay, right.
So they needed to go talk to Lisa. Lisa said they did go tubing, and she ended up dropping Angie and Ashley off at home around 5:30 p.m. the evening before they went missing. Officer Orth reported that Lisa's demeanor was really flippant in that initial interview. And remember, Lisa's the one who called in the welfare check.
Right.
When Angie didn't show up to work. So this was like very strange that she was acting this way. She asked her again, so is it weird that Angie would no call, no show to work? Lisa was like, well, like kind of. But it's like, why would you call in a welfare check?
Yeah.
if it's not out of the ordinary.
Right.
So anyway, just a really weird thing kind of threw her off. And she was just like, I got to keep an eye on this Lisa character. So, I mean, everybody else was pretty upset about their disappearances. Why isn't her best friend upset?
Right.
Then she got to thinking, she's like, what if the person that the neighbor saw backing into Angie's driveway wasn't Angie at all?
Mm-hmm.
Could it have been Lisa?
That's what I'm thinking.
Might she have something to do with it? But police checked with the grocery store manager, and Lisa's shift at that store started at 5 a.m. that morning.
Oh.
The day of the welfare check, and her manager verified that she was there on time, so it couldn't have been Lisa that the neighbor saw at 6 a.m.
Right.
Okay. So she's like, ugh, and yeah, keep getting these little flickers, and then it leads nowhere. Now, the day after the disappearance, Officer Orth wasted no time covering all her bases. Like I said, she went to talk to Bert. She talked to Lisa again. She's pounding the pavement, talking to neighbors. She called the hospitals, other jurisdictions to follow up on the bolo, and she went to the bank. Bank records showed that there was no activity after July the 8th, so the day before they went missing. Additionally, in the recent days or weeks, there was nothing that was significant regarding any like large cash withdrawals or transfers or anything else that would set up alarm bells or shed light on where they were. You remember the Robert Hoagland case when they went to look at his bank records and saw that he withdrew like $700 before he went missing?
Right.
So that's a red flag. You know, if she had withdrawn a lot of money, then they would be like, okay, maybe she left on her own accord.
Right.
So,
but there was, she wouldn't have left the candles burning.
Right. Yeah, definitely not. But she had none of that. She had none of that.
Right.
It was just crickets in her bank account, basically. Huh. And even though Officer Orr was busy busting her booty, Cresco was a really small town, as I stated. There were only 6 officers.
Oh.
In the department. 6.
Yeah, that's small.
Yeah. So Agent Jim Wirtz with the Iowa Department of Criminal Investigations came on board to assist them with the investigation. Not only was it a huge help to have more hands on deck, but this also provided the department with resources they may not have had at their disposal. And the case was now garnering national attention.
Oh.
At this point. So that was awesome. It was on the national news that Bolo was still in effect. Search parties had formed. Things were really picking up speed. Police even got a call that a small girl had been found unharmed at a nearby truck stop. But when police went to check on this young girl, it was not Ashley.
Oh, no.
And that was a blow. The family was so hopeful, like holding their breath.
Yeah.
And it wasn't her.
I mean, you're right. They keep going from one lead to the...
I know. So they were getting calls. Like they were, you know, they were following up on things, and the investigation was well underway. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about all the time where there's just nothing going on in an investigation. They're not doing anything, but they were really doing it over there. But nothing was panning out for them. It wasn't until they circled back to the things that they recovered from Angie's house that they realized the piece they needed to solve this mystery was in their possession the whole time.
Really? Do tell.
Remember Angie's diary?
Yeah.
Well, they were reading through it, as you shouldn't do, but as you should do if someone's missing, to see what she'd been up to in the days preceding her disappearance. Yeah.
What were her plans? What were her thoughts?
What was she doing? Who was she with? Who was she going to see? Was the tubing written down? And they came across some information that suggested that Angie may have fancied somebody.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. In her diary, it mentioned that she had gone to a carnival and met a guy there.
Mm.
And who would know about some guy you like better than your best friend. So they were like, we need to talk to Lisa again about this, you know,
yeah,
these notes. Like, does she know about this diary? Lisa was like, I've never seen that before. Like, she had never seen her date book or diary, which I thought was interesting. But Lisa said, oh, yeah, she met some carny named Clay. Can I say carny? Is that offensive? If it's not offensive now, it will be.
So right. You're
I'm
exactly
just
going right.
to say it just, because it's in all
as
the reporting.
I said before, you do you, boo.
If you're a carny, please write us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com and let us know if you're offended. Thank
yeah,
you.
We won't say it again.
So she's like, yeah, she met some carny named Clay, and I really teased her about that. Like, okay. Met some carny. Okay.
Yeah.
Lisa also added that Angie had gone out with a guy to a wedding a couple days before she disappeared. Some guy named John Walls. Officer John Walls.
Okay.
Right. So they went down the hall and said, excuse me.
Knock, knock.
Pardon me, John. Can you put that donut down? We need to talk. And they said, you didn't think it was important to mention that you went out with a woman who's now missing
mm-hmm.
just days after you went out with her? And he's like, well, she went to a wedding. She invited me to be her date. And he's like, yeah, I went with her and I was her date, but it wasn't like a romantic thing. We didn't. You know, it's not like we went out to dinner and drinks and dancing. We just went to a wedding.
Yeah.
I dropped her off. That was it.
So and nonchalant.
Exactly. That word is in my notes.
Well.
He acted kind of nonchalant about it. He just was like, I didn't think it was, I mean, six officers in the PD and yeah. you know she's missing. You don't just want to do your due diligence and say, hey.
Yeah.
Just so you know,
this is all the information I have. Like, this may be important.
Yeah. Like, if it comes up, we went to a wedding.
Yeah.
If it comes up,
because now you look a little sus.
Exactly. So anyway, they were like, okay, here's what's going to happen. You're going to go sit in that corner and think about what you did. And also, you're going to have nothing to do with this case.
Right.
Like, get back to your donut. But who is this carny guy?
Yeah, let's go find him.
Who is this carny named Clay? You know, Agent Wirtz and Officer Orth went to the fairgrounds to see if these carnival workers were still kicking about. Maybe they're still there.
Right.
You know, the carnival was in town just a couple days before that. So they ended up running into a group of people that were packing up.
Oh, and lucky.
Yeah, they knew Clay. They're like, yeah. They said, yeah, Clay and his wife worked for the carnival.
Oh, no.
But he left town and they hadn't seen him.
Likely
story. They were like, he just quit. He just ran out. Well, when they followed up with the company that, like, employed the carnival workers, they said, no, Clay didn't quit. He and his wife just didn't show up for work Monday.
Oh, well, I wonder why.
He didn't, like, call and let us know. They just didn't come back. They left and didn't come back. So a huge break came when someone attempted to use Angie's credit card.
What a dummy.
And they tried to cash a check at a gas station. You gotta be a dang fool. Like, are you for real? Come on.
Do you not see on the news that they're looking for this person?
Stupid idiot. Well, the Dream Team, who's Agent Wirtz and Officer Orth, they headed over to Kansas to lay eyes on this check. Because they're like, well, all right, let's see. Could be Angie. Maybe it's Angie writing this check.
Hopefully.
Maybe she's using her credit card. We don't know. They compared a known handwriting sample with the handwriting on the check, and it was clearly not a match.
Didn't match.
You are not the father of the check.
Right.
And it was at this point they knew. she had been robbed. They're like, she's been robbed. Gosh. And someone is in possession of her financial things. And this isn't good. Like, we can't find her and her daughter. This is not good. And it was at this point that they noticed, oh, there's cameras in here.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know how we get to these parts of the story?
I'm throwing my head back.
And it's like,
don't say
the cameras
it.
Weren't working that day.
No.
Well, lucky for these detectives, they were working.
You sack had me mind. On a roller.
Sack your mind. They were working.
Okay.
And they were working great. Like, it was a very clear footage of the people.
Nice. I'm proud of this.
Yes, exactly. Company. There was a couple. And when they saw this man and this woman, they were like, well, that's not Angie. Like, so they're thinking maybe some guy took her or whatever. It wasn't Angie in the footage. And furthermore, they were driving Angie's car.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So they suspected that this couple was Clay and his wife, Bobby Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And they were correct. Clay and Bobby lived in Atchison, Kansas. And Clay had a criminal record.
Oh, wow.
Like a lengthy one. He'd been in and out of jail for theft and robbery since he was like a kid.
Come on, guy.
Yeah. His mother later said that when Clay was 13, her youngest child was taken from her and put in state custody. I don't know the details of that, but it doesn't really matter. But she said that since then, Clay started committing these petty crimes. At 13, and he'd been in trouble with the law ever since. Just a scrub.
Yeah, low life.
Yeah. Now, police in Iowa now had the assistance of the police in Kansas, because now we're crossing state borders.
Right.
Now we're getting other jurisdictions involved, especially when that's where he lived. And they ended up tracking him down to this motel where they had been rumored to have been hiding out. There's only so many places.
Yeah.
These miscreants can fester, mm-hmm. you know, and a seedy motel is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Officers descended on their room in cinematic style.
Okay.
And took their booties in for questioning. Now, at the station, Clay admitted that he had met Angie at a carnival. He knew who they were talking about. He's like, I just don't know where she is. Mm-hmm. Like, I know her, but I don't know where her daughter's at. So they pressed him. Sir, you have her car. You've got her credit cards. You're writing checks out of her checkbook.
Yeah, the gig is up.
And you don't know where she is. They're like, B to the S, you know? Mm. Now, he did some more denying before asking for an attorney. So that's probably the one smart thing he did.
Oh, yeah.
Now, in another room, they got Bobby Joe.
Mm-hmm.
She was being questioned. And initially, she did the same thing. She denied. She didn't even know who this woman was. She never even admitted she knew who this woman was. Don't know Angie. Don't know her daughter. Don't know where they are. But once Officer Orth said, well, a neighbor saw you
mm-hmm.
in her car the morning of July the 9th.
Mm-hmm. Tell me how that's possible.
Of course, we don't know, you know, if it was her right. at this point, but
we can assume
it was brilliant.
Yeah.
And she cracked.
Aha. Uh-huh.
She cracked open like an egg.
Good.
She said that Clay took off the night before on a bicycle and he was gone for quite some time before returning early the next morning in a car. And he said, get in.
Oh.
She's like, where'd you get this car? Where are we going? He's like, we're getting out of here. But first we have to stop off somewhere. Because I killed a woman and her daughter.
Oh, no.
And you're going to help me clean up this mess.
Wow.
Yeah. So they drove to Angie's house in her car. They picked up Angie's and Ashley's bodies. Put them in the trunk. Drove to Kansas, and they did back up in the driveway, by the way.
Ah.
They got a shovel from Clay's mother's home and drove to a nearby park where they buried the bodies. Bobby said she only went along with this because Clay had threatened to kill her. She's like, look, he burned me with a cigarette lighter.
Oh.
The cigarette lighter out of the car.
Okay.
She had a big burn on her arm. And they saw. They're like, okay, well.
You could have done that to yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Bobby seemed really remorseful, and she was crying. She felt, you know, she looked kind of shattered by the whole thing. She even told them exactly where they could find Angie and Ashley. Their bodies were found in a wooded area near Atchison State Fishing Lake, in a shallow grave. And their families, of course, mm-hmm. absolutely destroyed. Like, yeah. I can't even imagine getting that phone call, holding your breath.
Yeah.
And getting a phone call that someone thought your loved one was so unimportant for this world that they not only ended their life, decided you don't need to live anymore, but then they took their remains to another state.
Yeah.
From their home. And buried them in a isolated, muggy, humid, snaky,
oh, no.
nasty wooded area alone. Unimaginable. Yeah. Like, how could you do, like, just toss them out like that?
Yeah.
Anyways, I digress. With that, July 18th, 9 agonizing days later, after the girls had gone missing, Clay Thomas was arrested. They brought his rear end back to Iowa to face the music.
Good.
Now, they had Bobby's confession. They had discovered the bodies. Clay was backed up against a wall. He really had, he had to confess. And he did. He ended up confessing to the murders. He said that he and Bobby Joe were kind of at the end of their rope, out of money. The carnival wasn't bringing in much money for this big fat loser.
I mean, there are other jobs you can go get.
Do something else. So when he met Angie at the Tilt-A-Whirl in June, he saw a vulnerable young woman and had, maybe she had a little more than he did. So he thought, this always amazes me about people who, rob. It's like, what was your expected haul? Like,
right.
Did you think, oh, if I can just get a couple $100, that's cool.
To take someone's life for that.
Or if I can just get one good piece of jewelry that I could sell or pawn. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because Angie wasn't well off. I mean, she wasn't living in squalor. She was making an honest living. She had a home. She was supporting her and her daughter.
That's the thing.
But like, she wasn't
people who
like,
work so hard for their things and you're going to go take it.
I know. It's sick.
Who are you?
Like, what? Was it worth it? Was it worth it, Clay? What did you get really in the end?
Right.
Anyway, he was invited back to Angie's house for the second time. So I said he met her in June. Met her in June. He went over to her house. They hung out. And then when the carnival was back in town the next month, he was like, now's my chance.
Mm-hmm.
So he was invited back over to Angie's house because she liked him. He went over there for a second time. They were hanging out. At one point, she went upstairs because Ashley had a bad dream. So she went up there and consoled her and said, go back to sleep. Everything's fine. She came back downstairs. And then at one point, she started complaining about her back. She's like, oh, my back just really hurts. And he's like, I can rub your back for you.
Mm.
And she did what I would do. Let me go get my smell good lotions.
Yeah.
You know? So when she laid down on the floor to be massaged, he straddled her and then kind of pretended to give her a massage at first. And then he started strangling her with his bare hands. Well, she broke free.
Okay.
And he chased her through the house, and it wasn't long before he caught her and overpowered her and strangled her to death.
Oh my gosh.
When he was done with her, he went upstairs and strangled Ashley, who was sleeping in her bed.
Yeah. No.
Sleeping in her bed.
No words.
I... I don't have words. Why? Why? I mean, when Angie went upstairs to see Ashley after that bad dream, he could have just looked around, grabbed whatever he wanted, and left.
Yeah, just go.
Just steal what you... Take her car, for crying out loud. Steal what you want.
Yeah, but he, at this point, he knew that she had already seen him.
Okay,
and
if you're thinking... You're reading my notes.
Okay.
Because you're thinking, well, she could have identified him.
Yeah.
What about Ashley? Why did he have to go up there and kill her? She was asleep.
Yeah.
Like, he could have just killed Angie and left. If that's, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. If he's like, oh, well, she can identify me. Why an 8-year-old who's literally asleep upstairs?
Well, because she could say... This man from the carnival came.
I guess.
Little did he know.
I don't know if she knew him, because the time before he came over, like when he came over the first time in June when they first met, Ashley wasn't even there. She was staying with her dad at that time. So, like,
did she even see him?
Did she even meet him? Angie doesn't strike me as the type who would have had men in and out, like. She seemed like really protective over her daughter. So right. She probably waited till she went to sleep to have someone over, you know.
For him, it was just a opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, by his own admission, she was upstairs in bed asleep. Yeah. Like,
no
just
reason.
Despicable. Well, police chose not to charge Clay's wife, Bonnie. Bobby.
Okay.
Whatever her name is, because they genuinely believed her claim that she was forced into helping Clay bury the bodies. That was really surprising to me. Not even a lesser charge of like abuse of a corpse or accessory after the fact.
Yeah. I mean,
I just feel like there are so many other lesser charges they could have slapped on her.
Yeah. Because she did the crime. She tried to lie about it.
I'm really conflicted about this. I didn't see much reporting about the details about her and like her involvement or lack thereof or whatever. But I really hope they did some investigating. Like, did they talk to her friends and family and say, was she this battered woman? Was she scared of her husband? I mean, she knew who she was married to.
Right.
So this wasn't like he showed up with a car and was like, I committed a crime. I murdered someone. She knew she was marrying a criminal.
Right.
So, I mean, I know that abuse victims, they get stuck and they...
But if he's going off traveling around with this carnival, just let him go. Like, you don't... I don't know.
Yeah, she worked with him. And you know... That's what I mean is, like, did they look into this further? Was she really some victim? Like, I don't know. It's just, it's a question mark for me. If she was, then I really hope she's doing well. But I don't know. It's just kind of curious to me. Well, April 4th, 2002, Clay's trial started. In opening statements, Clay's defense attorney, Letitia Turner, informed the jury that she wouldn't do much in the way of disputing the charges. However, she urged them to understand that he did suffer a head injury as a result of an accident just 5 years before that, when he was 18 years old. She said he suffered the serious brain injury that left him in a coma for a few days. And ever since then, he had been incapable of knowing right from wrong.
Well, then why was he let out to just roam the country?
Further, the defense claimed that his inability to plan or premeditate was impaired by this brain injury. So... That's the element the state is going after, that first-degree murder charge. He couldn't plan this. He couldn't premeditate this. Like, he's completely unable to do so. Well, the prosecution contended that Clay knew good and well what he was doing.
Yes.
Just like all the other crimes he had committed, you know, since his head injury, He met Angie at the Howard County Fair in June of 2011, a month before her murder. They explained how they had already met. You know, this was the second meeting that he was going over, and he planned to go over there. He planned to kill her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, premeditation is that blink of an eye, you know, blink of an eye, you pull a trigger. That's premeditation.
Yeah.
In the state's eye. That's all they need. You had your finger on the trigger and you had a chance to not do it.
Yeah.
But you planned and chose to do it. That's premeditation. That's all they need.
Yeah.
So they had all of this. He planned to go upstairs.
Yeah.
He planned every step.
He did that not he have took. To. He could have turned right around.
Exactly. He planned to pick up that pair of jeans and strangle Ashley.
Oh my God.
Sleeping in bed with a pair of jeans. Sick.
Yeah.
Then forget the premeditation and execution of the murders. He took great lengths to conceal what he did.
Mm-hmm. Involving his wife.
Exactly. Those aren't the actions of someone who is unable to know right from wrong. Okay? It is true that his behavior did worsen after the accident, like his criminal behavior. His mother said as much. But to make the argument that he's somehow exempt from a consequence.
Wow.
Due to this head injury is absolute garbage, and I don't want to hear it.
No.
So his wife, Bobby, testified at the trial for the state and told the jurors that she only assisted in the disposal of the bodies under duress. She said he threatened her and she was afraid of him. But the defense came after her on cross. They said, then why'd you lie to police? You lied multiple times to police. Yeah. Like,
you had
why
several chances.
Did you flee? Why did you hide out in a motel? Like, why were you hiding? And she just said, I was scared. And besides, she wasn't on trial. So,
yeah,
she was like, I was scared. And she did come off a little frustrated in the trial, which I get. And again, the defense was not arguing the charges. They were arguing, I guess, the quality or the tier of the charges, the first degree murder.
Okay.
But the jury had deliberated for less than 2 hours. Mm. And they had found Clay guilty of 2 counts of first degree murder and sentenced him to life in prison.
Bye.
I don't know what Bobby Joe is up to these days. We know Clay's rotting at the Moam, you know, mm-hmm. going to the commissary with his little nickels and saying, can I have a Pop-Tart?
Some ramen noodles.
Probably some great value Pop-Tart. Not even Pop-Tart brand, but like Walmart brand. But hopefully Bobby is not committing other crimes.
Maybe she learned her lesson.
Maybe she married some guy on Wall Street. And she's living in a mansion right now, raising her 5 kids and has a nanny. Maybe she really made something of herself.
Well, I would hope so, because you owe it to Ashley and Angie yeah. to turn your life around and make something of yourself since they didn't get to.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder what her life, like what kind of turn her life would have taken.
Right.
Maybe she would have worked at that grocery store forever, but she was happy, content. She was providing for her daughter. You know, they were comfortable and happy, and her daughter was just happy. Like, she would have gone on to get married, and
yeah, who knows? Possibilities are endless.
It just, I hate it. I hate that their storyline, their timeline just stopped. It stopped.
And for what?
For what? So he could drive her car to another state and not get to use her checkbook?
Right.
Idiot.
You said it earlier. Senseless.
It is senseless. It's senseless. of the highest order.
Yeah.
This reminds me of that case where the girl went over to the guy's house just so they can rob him. You know what I mean? Like the, that little pissant girl, what was her house? Like 17. She met that really sweet guy and he had all these hats. I can't remember his name.
Hilaire. Adam Hilaire.
Yes. Adam Hilaire.
Yes.
So moral of the story is like, go get a job. If you don't like your job and you think, oh, I'm just going to take from others.
No.
Stop. Stop it. Anyways, it just really infuriates me. I cannot stand people who leech off of other people.
Girl. Yeah, like, just work hard. Like, be something
or
to be proud
of. Or don't work hard.
Of.
Work part hard. Like, go get an office job and sit on, play solitaire all day.
I mean,
Just do something, but make your own money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you want to be a scrub, at least make money so people don't have to
don't
support
take
you.
Others. Yeah. That's.
This is just disgusting. Like,
yeah.
I hate it. I hate it so much.
Well,
unfortunately, I have nothing more to say because Angie and Ashley didn't get to live for me to say more. And I'm certainly not going to talk more about Clay and Bobby Joe.
No, that's enough. So I'm just going to say rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
Ashley and Angie.
Fly high,
little
angels.
Yes.
And
well, thank you for telling their story, Candace.
Yeah.
That was great. Not so great.
No.
But let's do it again sometime.
Yeah. We'll have to do it again.
Yeah.
We'll see you next week, guys.
Bye, y'all.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please consider leaving us a positive review and rating. To make sure you never miss an episode, subscribe to our show.
You can also follow us on Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast or send case suggestions to cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.